Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. That's why when it comes to hard work, nothing works harder than a Chevy Silverado. No wonder Chevy Silverado is the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Check out a new Silverado at ChevyDriveChicago.com.
Eric Zorn joins us now, the publisher of a newsletter here in Chicago called the Picayune Sentinel. Do you watch that Mulaney thing yet, Eric?
I did watch it, yeah, and I thought it was really interesting, you know, how he went into discussing his whole situation with drugs and rehab. Now, you know, I'm a big John Mulaney fan. I know he's clearly not a perfect person. I thought that he was going to get more into what happened to his marital situation. Clearly, the drug issue really complicated his personal life, and that's been part of the narrative. And that he really stayed away from that, at least in the Netflix special. I didn't see him live, so I don't know if he got into it on the stage version of it. But I thought that was an important element that I was kept waiting for. It just never showed up.
Yeah, right. If it was Chris Rock, he probably would have gone there. But it's John Mulaney, and you know, maybe there's no point in making that part of the grist for his show if it's going to further complicate his life. You just keep hoping every time you see him up on stage that this time it's going to stick, that he'll stay healthy. And he talks at great length. The whole bit is about his intervention, his rehab, and, you know, his addiction to drugs, which he always used to refer to in a sort of shockingly offhand way. But then the latest couple of episodes for him, it's all he talked about on this latest show. I mean, essentially, that was the show, right?
Well, yeah, and you know, his life just spiraled down from, I think it was in 2020, wasn't it? Somewhere around Christmas of 2020. And I mean, he's a fabulous storyteller and a very funny man, and I've always really liked his comedy. And this was he let himself be pretty vulnerable in this special. And I mean, I've been recommending it to people. So
yeah, okay. More about that and a few clips from it in the 1 o'clock hour. You don't have any wisdom for us about that crash on I-55 yesterday, but as a journalist who's followed Chicago and Illinois news for years, have you ever heard of anything like what happened south of Springfield on Monday?
Nothing. And you know, it reminded me, and you and I, I'm sure, both been in whiteout situations where you're driving along and it's snowing, it gets worse and worse, and you slow down, and finally you can't see anything. Apparently, that's not what happened here. This looks like it came up pretty quickly, so people they weren't crawling along and then came to a stop. It was like suddenly they couldn't see anything. And I've never heard of anything like that, and it must have just been completely terrifying, because what do? You can't see the road, and you can't see anything in front of you, so you can't keep going. But you know, if you throw on the brakes, unless the people behind you throw on the brakes, and then you've got these massive trucks barreling along, and they can't stop very quickly. And, oh my God, it just sounds horrifying.
Yeah, we can all relate to this, because if you've driven north-south on an Illinois road when it snows, you've run into these things at least temporarily. And you're afraid to go forward because you'll run into somebody, but you're afraid to stop because you're afraid somebody will hit you from behind. The thing that I don't understand, though, is the speed that these vehicles must have been moving, because some of those things were completely demolished. If there's 6 deaths and almost 36 injuries, then you've got to believe speed was also a factor. You know, if you were playing bumper cars at 20 miles an hour, I don't think it would be this bad. So I'm curious what the police are ultimately going to say about the role that played.
Well, I can't believe that all those people were driving irresponsibly. My guess is that this came up really suddenly, came up like a cloud blew across their field of vision. Because why would you be going 50, 60 miles an hour?
Well, I don't know, but I see that when the whiteout conditions, though. That's the thing. I should shut my mouth, because I don't know what happened there. But I do know a lot of times when it's snowy and icy, you'll see people going really fast, and you think, what are you doing? Those people seem to make it through all the time, but you know, if something goes badly, they're not going to be able to stop in time. You know?
Dude, I can't believe that there was a critical mass of people like that. And also, you know, for all people may bag on truck drivers, I've found in the truck drivers are fairly responsible when it comes to bad weather. Like, you don't see them going 70 when they can't see. I mean, it's their livelihoods. They know how hard it is to stop. I can't. I mean, I'll be very interested to find out exactly what happened here, but it just sounds like such a freak occurrence. And your heart goes out to all the people who are just driving along. And I heard on your newscast there that they still can't even identify some of the people who were killed in that crash. So it and I saw the images, of course, of the cars.
Oh my gosh! It's just
stunning.
And then the fact that a couple of the rigs caught fire just added another layer of weirdness to the thing. So Greg Abbott continues to send people to Chicago. Now there's this exchange of letters between the governor there, the migrants, an exchange of letters between the governor and the mayor. J.B. Pritzker has sounded off on this. Yeah, you know, I don't know Greg Abbott. Everything I do know about him, I don't like. But I think he has a point in that Texas should not have to bear the burden of these people by itself. To me, this argument should be with the federal government. Eric, isn't that the problem here?
Well, absolutely it is. And if you read the letters to the editor in the Tribune this morning, there are like three of them all basically making the same point, which is that Chicago has proudly declared itself to be a sanctuary city for immigrants. And so now that claim is being really put to the test. Like, oh, you declare yourself a sanctuary city, but you're way up here in the upper Midwest, and we hit in Texas and Arizona, we have to deal with these problems directly daily. So we're just going to share that burden around. And I totally agree with you. I think this is a federal problem. It should not be a state problem. It should not be a city problem. This is something that the United States has decided that we are going to allow these asylum seekers in. And I think that's not a bad policy to figure out.
But do you know, does Greg Abbott send these people to Indianapolis and Oklahoma City? And help me out here. What are some buttons we can push that would be red cities or red states? Has he done that?
Well,
because if he's really just saying, hey, we need to share the ball, why is he only trying to score political points with Washington, D.C., New York, Chicago?
Well, it's clearly a political move, right? It's why they send immigrants, but they bus them to the vice president's house and so on. I mean, this is not a coincidence. They're sending them to cities like Chicago and New York. And remember when they sent, was it DeSantis who sent them to Martha's Vineyard?
Yeah.
I mean, they're clearly trying to make a political point with this. And I get their political point, which is like this needs to be a national problem. And if I send them to Oklahoma City, for instance, or to, you know, Lincoln, Nebraska or whatever, that's not going to make the impact on our politicians that sending them to places like Chicago and Washington, New York, and Martha's Vineyard is going to make. So I get the point, and I agree with the basic idea that this should be a federal problem. It's not Chicago's problem. It's not Cook County's problem. It's not Texas's problem. It's the United States' problem to deal with. And I say problem, I mean, you know, it's a situation that we have and that our laws are allowing for. And so if that's the case, then we all need to share that burden, that responsibility equally, right?
Isn't it ironic, maybe that's the right word, that we have a labor shortage in America at the same time that we can't keep the migrants out? And I don't know how, you know, I don't think it's as easily solved as, well, you just pluck that person there and drop them in a retail store there. But it would seem to me like a federal policy that would find a way to process these people and integrate them would make sense. We have neither the will nor the ability right now to do that.
Right, and you saw this front page story in the Sun Times this morning about these asylum seekers who are living in police stations.
Yeah, right.
And they've got head lice, and their children don't have diapers, and the cops are feeding them sandwiches because they don't have food, and it's a terrible situation, disgraceful. And essentially, it's like the city's bluff is being called, like our national bluff is being called. We are a welcoming country, welcoming city, but we need to figure out a better way to deal with this situation than to put them in police stations.
Well, that's what makes me angrier, because, yeah, right. Guess what, Lori Lightfoot? You said that. You thought it was really easy to say we're a welcoming, affirming sanctuary city when you were thousands of miles away from the problem. Well, it just landed on your doorstep, and you realize you are no more equipped to handle this than they are. So point scored. But in the meantime, there's a child today with lice sitting on a police floor eating food that somebody's handing him. And that's what Greg Abbott did. That's not what Lori Lightfoot did. That's what Greg Abbott did. So he can score all the points he wants. We got it. But in the meantime, those are human beings, and he doesn't seem to care a whit about that.
Well, that's true, and that's the case. The thing is that that family might be, you know, on a bus station floor somewhere down in Texas if they're not in a police station floor in Chicago. I mean, it's not necessarily true that they would be any better off down there than they are up here. So it's a difficult point to make there. But feel like using these people as pawns to make your political point and not caring whether they is them to sleep, a place for them to eat when they get to Chicago. I'm just sending them up to with a one-way plane ticket. There's something sort of obscene about that. That this needs to be addressed federally rather than by governors trying to pick on each other.
I want to repeat this for a complete list of what and how to donate or volunteer. If you only want to send items or if you want to in some way volunteer, you can visit chicago.gov/support. chicago.gov/support. You can also find a list of items they're looking at chi.gov/wishlist. There's other sites that are trying to help these people as well. Lots of text messages about the dirt blown across I-55. Are you kidding me, John Williams? It's Illinois on the interstate. Of course those people were driving irresponsibly and speeding. Hey, John Williams, is this an argument for self-driving vehicles? There's a lot of buttons on that story, Eric, including maybe we should do a better job of encouraging farmers to do some sort of no-till farming that turns over less soil in a scene like that.
Well, I don't know what the answer is to that. I do know that having driven back and forth to Springfield many times in my career, people do drive like maniacs on I-55 in good weather. So it's possible that this is all caused by irresponsible driving, but it really sounds like a freak fluke accident and not something that can be blamed on speeding. But I think it's interesting to speculate that people died, and I think we need to wait a few more days or hours at least to figure out what really did happen, rather than, especially the idea of blaming someone for what happened. I don't know.
Hey, talk to me about this story in your Picayune Sentinel newsletter. I mentioned earlier that some people file more claims than the insurer likes, so then they cut them off. What happened here?
Well, this is a friend of mine on Facebook had been posting about the fact that he had filed a claim for about $2,100 because a branch had fallen on their house on a windy day and had ruined their roof and gutters. And $2,100 is not a big repair, but he filed with State Farm. He'd been a customer there for 35 years. And this was the third claim that he had filed since 2019, that there had been he had another storm, there was some hail damage, and then there was some water leakage damage. Anyway, after 35 years, he files his claim, and then after he files his claim, the State Farm says, well, that's it. We're not going to renew your policy. And his claim is not that they shouldn't be able to do this, but that he needed to be warned, that his agent had a responsibility to tell him that, look, for this $2,100 claim, you're going to be cut off. And when you're cut off and you can't get coverage anywhere else, you've got to go on the Illinois FAIR plan, F-A-I-R. It's for people who can't get insurance elsewhere. It's a state-mandated insurance pool. So they're paying now, Jim and his wife are paying an extra $4,500 a year for their FAIR plan for 3 years. So this is going to cost them. This $2,000 repair is going to cost them $13,500. And, my beef here, Jim's beef, was just that this is something that the insurance industry needs to be more upfront about, because they do this when you file a claim. Or you file too many claims, they'll raise your premiums. And you understand maybe why they do that, but they need to tell you when you're going to file this claim. Look, these are going to be the consequences of filing the claim, just as a matter of transparency. Like, hey, you want your $2,100 to fix your roof? Well, but the odds are that we're going to raise your premiums by an amount that's going to cover that, so that you're going to end up 2 or 3 years down the line not making any money on this or losing money on the deal. Or we're going to cancel your policy, in which case you're going to have a hard time getting a new coverage, and it's going to cost you money to go into this insurance pool that the state runs. So it's more of a plea for transparency rather than to shake a finger too hard at the insurance business. Just like, hey, tell us the consequences of filing a claim.
Well, I don't know how much money they made last year, say in 2022, but in the first years of the pandemic, they made so much, insurance companies did, they gave some of it back. And I think we've all been between that rock and a hard place where you pay the premium, you pay the premium, you pay the premiums on your insurance, hoping you'll never need it. Then you do. And sometimes you decide to eat the cost because either the deductible is too high or you're afraid they're going to kick you out or raise your rates. So, and the banks force you to have insurance. Of course you should, but I mean, it's not like you can't. So it's, I'm sorry. It would seem to me like it should be very difficult for an insurance company to cut you off. Not until the company itself is in some sort of upside down financial situation should they be able to. I know somebody whose house got struck by lightning. It was a ranch. The house got struck by lightning. It burned down. The insurance company cut him off. I don't know who the insurer was, but it would seem to me like that's probably not going to happen again. And it wasn't their fault. They're not a risk inordinate to the rest of the neighborhood. I think it should be harder for them to cut you off.
Yes, I agree with that. And I also think there needs to be standards that are clearly laid out. And we'll say, even with the auto insurance policy, if you're in a fender bender and you want to get those, you know, your bumpers repaired or get the side panel repaired, how much is it going to cost you down the line? Because how much are they going to raise your premium? It should tell you that before you file the claim. That should be part of the negotiation with the insurance company so that you know what the consequences are. And I think that if they did that, people might be a little bit more cautious about the amount of the deductible that you have. We have pretty high deductibles on our cars because we have learned the hard way that when you file these claims, ultimately it's a losing situation for you. So we feel like if we can, you know, $2,000-$3,000, we can afford that. It's not going to be easy, but we can absorb that loss rather than dealing with the insurance issues that are raised. So that's how we do it.
So that's in the Picayune Sentinel, and the reader's comments are interesting there as well. I have less than 60 seconds left. You wrote, I am bereft about Gordon Lightfoot and Harry Belafonte dying so close together. I understand they have, but why is it that you are mashing those two together that way?
My father played Harry Belafonte records all the time when I was a kid, and he also played Gordon Lightfoot records. I mean, that's the soundtrack of my life. And these two men died 6 days apart, and I am really sad about it. Gordon Lightfoot was a genius. You know, Bob Dylan can't say enough good things about Gordon Lightfoot. It's great, great material, and I just think he's a wonderful artist, and it's a huge loss. He was 84. He probably wasn't doing much in the way of creating anymore, but he was a giant, and I hope that in death he is truly appreciated, because you just run down the list of his hits, and it's astounding he did.
Eric Zorn is also a member of our Mincing Rascals podcast series, and I'll talk to you on the pod tomorrow, sir.
Thank you, John. Talk soon.